Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. If you'd like to learn more on how to communicate directly with plants, visit www.learnplantlanguage.com to register for the free workshop. That's www.learnplantlanguage.com. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I'm excited to introduce our next guest to the show today. Mimi Prunella Hernandez is an herbalist, ethnobotanist, and author of the National Geographic Herbal. With her wealth of knowledge, unwavering dedication, and genuine love for all things herbal, Mimi has made a significant impact in the field of herbal medicine. Her herbal roots are inspired by her Colombian and Mexican grandmothers, with a Latin American folk herbalism and curanderismo lineage. Mimi is also the executive director of the American Herbalist Guild, and she believes that keeping plant wisdom alive is essential. She has dedicated her life's work to serving as an advocate for both traditional and professional herbal pathways, while building cultural bridges of understanding. So Mimi, thank you so much for being here with us today. So great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure. I've been really just loving to be here with you and talk about plants and healing traditions and what's going on in our lives with nature.
Yeah, so great. And I'd love to just start there really and hear more about how your background in Latin American folk herbalism and curanderismo has really influenced your approach to herbal medicine.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I have roots in both South America and in Mexico. My mother is from Bogota, Colombia. And we have a lot of ancestry in the Amazon. And on the other side, my abuelita, who was a herbalist in Mexico City, and I grew up spending a lot of time watching her tend to her neighbors and watching her tend to her plants and to her herbal healing altar as a young girl. And I learned a lot about, especially, you know, what we call curanderismo. And curanderismo is a practice of herbalism really just based in Latin American folk beliefs. And I think the heart of curanderismo is that the soul and the body are one and the same. And we treat the spiritual as well as the physical, or both in tandem. And the spirit and the health of the spirit expresses itself physically, so that any of our physical ailments can be approached through the spirit. And a lot of what curanderismo associates with is this aspect of how comfortably seated the soul is in reference to the body. And if there's a lot of stress or a lot of trauma or a lot of loneliness or a lot of lack of community, that the soul has a tendency to disassociate from the body. And so the ultimate goal of the curandero or the curandera is to reconnect the soul with the body. And there's lots of things that would do that, obviously. So herbs, and also just like what my grandma used to call the plática, which is when you sit with someone, have a little chat with them, and it's really informal, but it's the chat that starts the healing process. It's just checking in with someone and learning about their story and letting them tell their narrative without a lot of questions, without a lot of insights right off the bat. It's more about just listening and letting someone express themselves, because a lot of times when people have ailments or have experience of certain maladies, they are not finding support within their own day-to-day life. And often their telling of their story might be a burden to their loved ones, and or maybe they feel too humble to really express what's happening with them. And so the plática is a big part of the healing, and then followed by prayer and plants and spiritual cleanses, which we call limpias. And so limpias are a really big part of kind of cleansing the body of any uninvited energy or anything that doesn't serve. And for example, one of a big ailment in curanderismo is called envidia, and that's envy. And, you know, when you are the subject of envy, it can afflict your health. And the envy can also penetrate your energetic field and affect your soul and its comfortable nature within your body. And so there's remedies for that. And there's remedies for some people call mal ojo, which is, you know, really associated with the gaze of someone upon you. So like some people might call it the evil eye, but there really is nothing evil about it. Sometimes people are just maybe staring or trying to understand, or like real common with this is young, vulnerable children who don't have a very strong protective field around them. And so someone from across the room might really be adoring that child from across the room, but the child's energy field is not really mature enough to handle that penetrating gaze of the observer. And so that's a concept that just looking upon someone in a prolonged way can lead to that infiltration and kind of cause some ailments. And so, yeah, so it's a very kind of, it has some superstitions, but I've seen some really wonderful healings just based on this model and just the profound effects that a limpia can have on someone, or the platica can have on someone, or just some folk remedies and herbs and altar medicine can have with someone's health.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And yeah, there's so much in what you just shared there. The thing that really, really stands out to me is the multi-layered aspect of it, and also the power of being present with people, the power of being present when we are present, when we listen, when we let people share, when we let people express themselves, how there's so much healing in that, and how as a practitioner, there's a lot of value in meeting people where they're at and really getting to know who is this being sitting in front of me, and that this can better support the healing process with the plants. So thank you so much for sharing that, and also just honor the lineage that you're carrying forward in that way, and honor the way that you bring this lineage forward in a way that is also translatable to the Western mind that is perhaps more accustomed to scientific models of understanding. So I really, really appreciate that. And yeah, just the many layers of being human, the many layers of the experience in the human body. And also, we were talking about this a little bit earlier too, the many layers of the plants and how they express themselves in these many different layers. And I was curious just in that experience of how you really are this bridge with the science and the Latin American folk herbalism experience. If you could share about the power of scent, the power of aromas, and how aromas and scent can help us both connect with the plants, with the healing power of the plants, and also with lineage, with experiences of lineage.
Ooh, yeah, that's a fascinating question. I definitely feel that the aroma of a plant is one way that plants communicate with people. And I definitely, you know, it's interesting you bring this up because, you know, we were just talking about my grandmothers and who both passed away before I was an adult. And I've had some very interesting experiences with their memory, with my memories that are triggered by different scents that they carried in my childhood. And I remember really clearly one day being at the National Library of Medicine, of all places, researching and pulling up recent research articles on herbal medicine, and just kind of out of nowhere. And I don't know if someone walked by or where this aroma came from, but I had this smell that I experienced. And here I am walking next to these computers, and just out of nowhere, I was almost paralyzed with memories. And I remembered my Colombian grandmother from Bogota, and she, and just like everything about her, from the wrinkles on her face to her face mainly, because she always had this shimmering glow on her face. And I just remembered her voice, and it was all like a sudden experience after I smelled this interesting aroma pass by. And so it's almost like my grandmother just came to visit me at the National Library of Medicine. And she may have, because my mom told me she was really interested in herbs and probably just affirming my research and things like that. But I didn't know what the aroma was associated with until a couple of years later, when I actually smelled a essential oil of helichrysum, which is a real healing plant that's really popular for like healing scars, and it's a topical in a lot of like face creams and preventing like aging and you know, things like that. And I remember that my grandma had this cream that she used to make and apply, and it had this shimmering, glittery hue to it. And now I know that to be like mother of pearl that was ground into powder, and that cream had helichrysum in it. And so, and it's what she wore every day. So that, really am grateful for that, for helichrysum, you know, as a kind of reminder of my grandmother. So yeah. And then like, even years later, ironically, I got this spritzer of a helichrysum hydrosol from a good friend of mine, herbalist Erica Galinton. And Erica had sat with the plant and determined that helichrysum was associated with the healing of generational trauma. And I just thought that was so interesting, because I associated helichrysum with my grandmother. And so, yeah, it was just wonderful, because I then like got some of this hydrosol and gave it to my oldest children and my mom. And I said, look, you know, we're going to heal all our generational traumas, from the grandparents to the grandchildren. And so powerful to have that message come through with the scent of helichrysum. And then I also had a similar experience with my Mexican abuelita. And this was more of my grandmother. My abuelita used to make this Mexican hot chocolate, which probably most grandmothers in Mexico have their hot chocolate recipe that they hand down. And I didn't get that recipe, so I wanted to just recreate it as a grown-up in my own kitchen. And so I kept experimenting with this hot chocolate, and I kept like, it was wonderful. Like, you know, what I made was great, but there was like something missing, and I couldn't quite pin what was in that hot chocolate that I needed, just that missing ingredient. Until years later, when I was like sitting in an herb class, and there were these little baggies of cinnamon coming around the room, different varieties, different species. And I smelling these different cinnamons. And finally, I got this little bag of cinnamon, and it said cinnamomum verum, or true cinnamon. And I opened that bag and I just took a whiff, and it happened so suddenly. And like all of a sudden, I could see the turquoise walls in my grandma's kitchen. I could like hear her stirring the chocolate pot. I could hear her little voice. I could like smell the cinnamon and chocolate. And it was just like, all of a sudden I knew that was my grandma's hot chocolate. That was the missing ingredient. That was the aroma that my grandmother held for me as a child. And so that was just such a interesting experiences. And as a science person, also, I've learned that aromas, these tiny little aromatic molecules, they're so tiny that they float into the air and they're airborne, which is why we can smell them, because they just kind of waft into our nasal passages and they land on this olfactory bulb, like a little receptor and a key. And as soon as they land on that bulb, they send a message, like this immediate message to the frontal lobe of your brain. And lo and behold, that's like what people say memories are affiliated with, that part of your brain. And I think that when we make memories, we store those memories along with the aromas that were present when we made those memories. And so often, to access those memories, you can use that aroma. This is a good student tool. If you're studying to memorize a list of plant families or something, and you have a certain signature smell around you, like rosemary or oregano, and then later when you're actually taking the test, you can smell that smell that was in the room with you when you memorized that list. And I used to do this as a student. I would like braid lemongrass into my hair or put little essential oil drops in my hair and in my braids, and then like just kind of smell them when I needed that memory retrieval. So yeah, it's kind of geeky, but also super profound with the memories of my grandmothers.
Beautiful. And just so amazing that they could live on in that moment, in those moments, as you were discovering, rediscovering your grandmother's hot chocolate recipe, and just the power of helichrysum for healing generational trauma. Certainly, I feel that that is such a huge thing that so many of us are doing in this lifetime right now, and just how amazing that the plants can be allies in that process. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, and how scent is such a powerful way for connecting with the plants. And I was curious too, are there some other ways that you connect with plant consciousness and their healing abilities that you'd be open to sharing?
I think that it's as simple as, you know, similar how you responded to my story about my Mexican grandmother's kind of role in holding space and sitting with people. I think it's similar in that the plants hold space with me. And I can, like, they pull me up for a platica. Like, I can go and I feel this invitation to just sit with them. And then it's almost like I hear that voice of, like, tell me what's happening. And then it gives me a chance to really sit and be like, look, here's what's happening. You know, here's how I'm feeling. And here's what this week has been like. And here's where I'm hurting. And just, it's almost like they're the curandero to me. And so I think it's just sitting with the plant, with a plant or a stand of plants, or even in the forest, you know, feeling summoned, feeling invited to share with them. And especially in times when, because I'm a very emotionally vulnerable person, when I feel alone, or when I feel kind of hopeless, and then I go outside and then I remember, oh, I have friends, and I just kind of take a walk and I'm like, hi. And I feel like they're excited to see me. You know, I feel like they're giggling with me. You know, I feel like if you know chickweed, all chickweed knows you. Even if it's a plant in a different state, it's chickweed. And I feel like there's this unified consciousness of chickweed that greets me with a giggle every time I encounter it. It's like, oh, hi, Mimi. And they're like giggly and they're all just like fun and excited to see me. And I hear that, even if it's like a totally different chickweed patch in a totally different country, it's like I feel the giggle. And so, yeah, I think just like sitting with these plants. One of my soul plants is called rue, and it's not a giggly plant. It's more of a very kind of deep and dark, profound, a plant of a serious nature, and really helps me clarify vision. I mean, it's associated with vision And it just kind of helps me when I can't see clearly. It's got this profound ability to kind of clear the cobwebs of a vision and clear the cobwebs when you feel like this sticky kind of energy around you, and it may or may not be your energy. And very often it's not your energy, especially if we're on the internet a lot and scrolling social media and watching the news, that we kind of take on this kind of sticky, webby energy around us. And it doesn't feel, it's not crystallized. It's not. In curanderismo, rue is one of those plants that we use as a limpia. And the way I see it is like it's cleaning the cobwebs. It's so such a wonderful experience, and it takes its role very seriously. I think those might be a couple examples where I feel like plant consciousness is in relationship with my own consciousness.
Yeah. Wow. That is so great. Such great examples too with the chickweed. I love, first of all, that you just shared about the unified consciousness of chickweed greets you with a giggle. Like, yes, I love that. And I feel that too, you know, when I'm outside walking with the plants and just walking among friends and how great that is, where, you know, when I travel and then I see some plant friends who I know here back in the Northwest of the United States, just how amazing that is to feel this connection of plants all around the world. Or we were talking about prickly pear earlier and how some prickly pear growing near you. And there's also some out here, and just how amazing that is. And rue, just so powerful. Do you feel that there's a connection with rue also with the lineage piece? In my understanding, that's a plant that a lot of people work with in Central and South America as well.
It is so, so pervasive in Central and South America and Mexico as a healing plant. And it's not native to Latin America. It's more of a like Mediterranean native plant. But as an introduced plant, it's something that has really profoundly developed a relationship with Latin American folk healers. And definitely, I watched my abuelita in Mexico heal a family member from the mal ojo. It was my little sister who had been at the market, and she was so cute. And a lot of people were just like adoring her. And she literally just fainted in the middle of the market. And we ran home with her and laid her on the bed. And my abuelita did this. They also do like this cleanse with an egg. It's like a diagnosis. And she like swept her whole body with this egg and then cracked the egg in a glass of water. And I just sat there watching it with her hanging on her apron strings. And all of a sudden, this yolk that was suspended in the water, this little button popped out of the yolk, and it literally looked like an eyeball staring at us. And that's when my grandma was like, oh, es el mal ojo. It's the bad eye. She's been affected by the gaze. And she knew exactly what to do. And she went and grabbed some rue and put it in water and like started sprinkling the rue droplets over her body. And I kid you not, like she woke up right away. It was like, oh, you know, so yeah, rue has some strong connections with like what I've seen growing up and then what I've discovered in my own journey with rue throughout my life as an herbalist.
Well, that is so powerful, and so powerful that she knew what to do in that moment. And to me, that speaks so deeply to how important it is to remain connected to these ancient lineages of healing. That this is so, so important, because when we encounter different maladies or imbalances in the human experience, we can be better equipped with a multitude of tools, a multitude of layers to adequately address what's going on the level that it's going on, that this is to get to the root of what is happening, and that there are many different ways, many different places where that root can be seated. And so it's so important to be connected to this. It's so wonderful that you were there for that, that you were able to experience that at such a young age. Yeah. And I want to come back to something that you were also sharing about as well, with this experience that you have of walking outside, connecting with the plants around, and how so important that is. And I know that one of your biggest passions in life as well is stewarding native plant sanctuaries. And so I was curious if you could share a little bit about that. I know right now you are stewarding the Ponderland Native Plant Sanctuary, if you'd be open to sharing about that, and then really anything else that you'd love to share.
Right. Yeah. It's been like a huge kind of emergence in recently in my life, because I've always been a city girl and I've always dreamed of having just a little patch that I can steward and take care of and teach from and just protect and love on. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I had experienced a dream of buying my first home, and where I was like really looking in neighborhoods and like your common everyday neighborhood. And my real estate was like, let's step outside of the box and let's go check out this place out here that's in your price range. And it's a little bit extra drive, but I know you like gardening and you're an herbalist and you might love this. So I came out here with my fiance, Terry. And the second we stepped out of the car, we're like, what? The same price as these neighborhood homes with 4 acres and just a cute little farmhouse. And that acreage had meadows and it had a pond and it had this floodplain and had some forest. And it was just like more than I ever could dream of. And so now I realize that that was definitely, I was called to this land. And, you know, when you're buying a house, it gets very nerve wracking. You're like, you don't know if your offer is going to be accepted, if the inspection, all this. And I just remember praying and praying that, you know, that I knew that this was the place for me. And I know that, you know, I would, if this place became the reality for me, that I would take care of it and I would steward it and I would teach and love on it. And so, yeah, we bought that house. We bought the house in November. And so I didn't even know what kind of plants were here yet because it was the winter, but it was magical. In the spring, I started getting out and taking walks and discovered this whole, like, in just 1 acre of woods, we've got this whole cove of black cohosh and bloodroot and yellow root and all these beautiful native plants to the foothills of Appalachia is where I am. And it's just, didn't want to just jump in, even though it was my dream. I didn't want to just jump in and say, okay, I live in on 4 acres and now it's officially a native plant sanctuary. I really took my time with that because first, one of my teachers, Rocio Alarcón, who is a curandera from Ecuador, has had a really enormous influence on me and herbal spiritual healing. Her first rule, she's like, if you want to be a curandera, the first step is to know your landscape. If you want to be a healer, you have to know your landscape. And so I was like, I'm going to be very slow about this and really just get to know the landscape here. From the lower, the bottom of the woods by the creek to the top of the woods where the pine trees are, to the ridge above the meadow, to the pond and what's around it, the seasons through the year, just really take inventory and get to know these different layers and how the soil is and the trees. And so that process took a good couple years and taking inventory and really learning my botany. And I literally cataloged all these plants using a database. And I've got now, I've identified over 120 wild native plants on the land. And some of them that are hard to find or they're at risk, 20 of those are listed on United Plant Savers at risk and critical list. So at that point, recently, actually, it was just happened in June that I finally submitted my application to become a member of the United Plant Savers Botanical Sanctuary Network. And I was accepted. And that was a huge, momentous occasion for the Ponderland. But it's something I wanted to take really seriously and not jump into, just like really, like Rocio says, really know the landscape. And I'm still learning every time I go out. I was just out this weekend and discovered like 3 new to me plants. And no matter how many times I've walked the woods, I still see new things. Like I had a good friend of mine, Mark Williams, who's also an herbalist, came through and we went for a walk together. And he's like really tall. And I think he just had a different viewpoint than I did. And he like taking a short walk with him, I learned like 3 or 4 new plants that I didn't even know were there. They're still introducing themselves to me. So such a beautiful experience.
Well, congrats on your new home and on becoming a UPS plant sanctuary. That's amazing. And I just love how the plants are still revealing themselves, still introducing themselves to you. And just incredible that you've cataloged over 120 plants. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I live in a very rich, beautiful area of the foothills here in Polk County, North Carolina.
And what inspired the name Ponderland?
I think it was just the pond. The pond is definitely such a central feature. It's like right in the front yard, 10 steps off the front porch. And it's like, this is a place where we're pondering our future and we're manifesting our goals together. Terry and I came in together with this property, and the whole expression of the Ponderland has been a manifestation of our unified vision as partners and soon to be married. We're actually getting married on the Ponderland. So just want to share this beautiful space with all of our family and friends, and really just give a lot of appropriate acknowledgments to the ancestors. And this is, we're on Cherokee land here, and protect this little piece of land for future generations. And because we're surrounded by huge tracts of land, every side there's neighbors who own like 40 or 100 acres of land. So we're just this like little island in the middle of these big properties who are off sometimes clear cutting. And just like, I can't do anything about that, but I can do something about just this little patch of land and keep it safe.
Amazing. Yeah, clearly you were called there. Yeah, thank you so much for doing that. And congrats on getting married. So exciting on the Ponderland. I was curious about that with the name too, if it was a place to ponder about native plants. So that's great. Yeah. So great. And then you recently wrote a book. Would love to hear about the book. And then also specifically, how do you help people deepen their relationship with herbs in the book? Any aspects that you want to share about that?
Great. What a great question. Yeah. So since I've moved to the Ponderland, literally those full 3 years, I have been writing a book. And that's another thing that I was just kind of called to. Out of the blue, I got a call from editor at National Geographic, who's like, hey, we were looking for you to see if you wanted to write a book with us. And who says no to National Geographic? So I'm like, okay, I'm being called to share what I've learned through my life in herbalism and from my grandmothers and from these different traditions. And so, yeah, the book does harness or does forge relationships and encourage individuals to be in relation with plants. The way it's organized, it's 9 chapters and 100 herbs from different rural traditions. And really, it's a journey. And that journey begins by an immersion in the sensory experience of herbs. And in some way, it's a journey from the micro to the macro, because it starts on a very personal level where I'm encouraging people to use their senses to experience herbs, like the taste, the smells, the feelings that these herbs, the energetics that these herbs induce when you're near them and when you taste them. And then from there, we kind of go to an equally intimate place of your kitchen, the healing kitchen, which is where really healing begins for so many cultures. And so we explore healing remedies in the kitchen and healthy foods. And from there, we kind of take a step aside into the apothecary or the medicine pantry. And we talk about medicine making and DIY recipes. And of course, then we kind of step out the front door and into the garden path. And there we cultivate allies and also weeds, because wondrous weeds are also part of the medicine. So we really explore that concept of, you know, my favorite garden plants, and then my, you know, our favorite weeds. And from there, we just enter the woods and we explore healthy woodland habitats. And we ponder the community uses of herbs. We explore different types of herbalism, from like the sacred herbalist to the clinical herbalist to first line medic herbalists and people who tend to their communities in different ways in the realm of herbalism. And then we kind of go from the community level to the global level, where we uncover a lot of the secrets of the world's most traveled herbs. So these are the ones you see on the market, and really a lot of critical topics relevant to the environment and the ecology and the indigenous and just ethical and ecological considerations of the global supply chain, and really just bring it back to the traditions. And we feature so many traditions in the book, including curanderismo and the Gola Geechee herbal tradition and Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine and wise women herbalism. Just so really giving a lot of spotlight to some of these world traditions, and especially to the concept of the ethnosphere and the preservation of these traditional wisdoms, which I think is so important, because there's a lot of attention these days on the biosphere of the planet and not losing species and to extinction and things like that. But I'm equally concerned about the cultural sphere of the world and the loss of languages and the loss of different traditions and different ways that we know how to engage with plants. And the ethnosphere is a concept from Wade Davis, who's a very well-known ethnobotanist. Yeah, so it's a beautiful experience, and it's beautifully photographed and illustrated, and just another thing that's just kind of beyond my dreams. And available now for pre-orders on any of your favorite book outlets like Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So it's hard to believe. I'm actually holding a copy of it right now, a pre-copy, because my publisher sent me an advanced copy. And so I'm holding it in my hand, and you're the first person I've talked to about it outside of my immediate family. So
it's so gorgeous too. I'm so excited to read it. It just sounds so incredibly comprehensive.
It really is. I mean, it is actually built from a course that I used to teach. It was like an 8-week course, and it started with sensory herbs, and then it was like garden herbalism, and then it was weeds herbalism, and then woodland herbalism. So it really is just kind of a journey through this course that I used to teach. But I learned a lot writing it, because, you know, you think you know herbs and then you're going to write about them. So I just did a lot of research, and it was like so great. It's almost like being a student again. When you're a teacher, you're always a student. So this endless exploration, right?
Yeah. And I love how that is certainly the case with the plants. It's endless. It's a lifelong journey of learning with them, which I just absolutely love. And so clearly your work is so powerful and incredible. So tell us, how can people find out more about you and your work?
Super. Well, my website is theponderland.com or mimiprunellahernandez.com. They all go to the same place. In the process of getting a new website, the existing website is still super sweet. And I'm on Instagram at Herbal Forager. And kind of new to it. So like my Instagram and spread the word, because I'm like really kind of learning all those ins and outs of posting reels and all that. It's like, wow, I'm really being called. I'm like 51 years old and being called to learn Instagram and all this stuff. It's been fun. I do love taking pictures and teaching, so that helps. And then I just made this new Facebook page, anticipation of the book, and it's Mimi Prunella Herbal. And on Mimi Prunella Herbal, that's just going to be my forum for just sharing herbal inspiration and herbal education, and just like making educational and inspiring posts as much as I can. So hopefully that'll be super engaging for the fans who want to flock over there.
Love it. Well, Mimi, thanks so much for joining us today. So incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I love it. You've got such a great demeanor and a very grounding presence. And honestly, I feel like so much more grounded and rooted than I did when I first got on the call with you. It's like just the session in and of itself was a healing experience. And I'm so grateful.
Oh, thank you. So great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.